Well, good morning. I do not know what's going on in my life. No, I'm kidding. The pastor calls you up on Monday and says, hey, can you speak this week? So, you know, that's good. But it's always good to be here. And I really do enjoy just sitting there, but also being able to speak and share. You know, there's something interesting. I've been in a lot of churches over the years, and when you come to a church and you go, this church has it. You don't know what it is, but they have it. And there really is a soft desire here to have a relationship with God. And that's incredible, because when you have that opening and you're not coming to church for a show, you're not coming to church for, you know, polished speakers who have gone to colleges to learn how to talk, and they have 18. I didn't know this, but you know, a lot of these mega churches, they have like 18 people writing their sermons for Sunday. And then basically the pastor gets up and gives a sermon. I didn't know that how it works. So, you know, Pastor Tim will be hiring some staff to write his sermons here as we continue to grow. And I didn't know that was a thing. And so, like, there's people who go to these churches, and that's what they go for. They go for the sound and the smoke machines and all that, and the feeling. But we don't go to church for the feeling. We go to church for an encounter. And so that's what's incredible. That's what I enjoy about here. We've been here some Sundays where it snowed or whatever, and maybe there's only 3-4 people here. But they come for an encounter. And there's also just a sense of family here, and I appreciate that. So, you know, I was going to close with this, but I want to start with it. I'll just change up. In Philippians, right off the bat, Paul says, I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer and joy in my every prayer for you all, in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. For I am confident in everything of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Jesus Christ. And, you know, I am so thankful for this church and the partnership you guys have had with our ministry of doing this. From Pastor Tim pulling me up on my first Sunday here and interrogating me in front of everybody, and just everything and everything else, and the continued support. And, you know, we were talking the other day about finances and how ministries are financed. And, you know, a lot of churches, you go into them and you have to go in and talk about finances. And what I appreciate about this church is your giving spirit. And I mean, I could give whole sermons on tithing and gifting to missions. I don't have to do that here. You guys have been such a blessing, and I'm just thankful for it. And I hope that this is something that can move throughout other churches, and not just for me. There are so many missionaries who are out there and doing things, and they are not from mega church or denominations. They are individuals who go out and they do work, and they need support. And so it's just a blessing to come to a place that gets it. And you guys are supporting, you know, so many pastors, and it's just, it's really a blessing. It really is. And I can't say anything more than that. It's just a blessing to be part of this ministry and everything that Pastor Tim has done. So apparently Pastor Tim is doing something right, and that's good. And we thank him for that too. Because I know, you guys may not know this, there's a lot of pastors out there, they show up for church on Sunday, they preach their sermon, they go home. And then they don't do anything all week, and then they show back on Sunday, they preach their sermon, go home. They get a full-time salary to do that. Isn't that a great job? You come in on Sunday, you preach a sermon, you go home, and you get a full-time salary. That's great. You got Pastor Tim who's going out, and he's doing visits, and he's meeting with me for lunch. I was impressed the other day. He called to verify I was coming to meet him the day before. And it was actually him that called me. He didn't have a secretary call me and say, yes, this is Pastor Tim's secretary checking in to see if you're still going to meet him tomorrow. Like, he called me, guys. And it's refreshing to see somebody who's actually involved in the community and doing things. So you guys, I know you do, but just make sure, you know, it is Pastor Appreciation Month. There's a plug. Remember that. And he didn't ask me to say this, but I am. He said he loves, yeah, Pastor Appreciation Sunday. He said he loves gold bars. I don't know. Yeah, we all do. Culver's gift cards, that goes a long way. But, you know, just remember that because it is Pastor Appreciation Month, and we want to appreciate the man of God and the calling that God's put on his life, probably unexpectedly to some extent, if not a great extent. And he's really stepped into that role and done what was needed to be done. So I wanted to kind of tell you a little bit about what's going on with us as far as this Trail of Tears trip. And give you a little bit of the history, because a lot of people, I'm realizing, don't necessarily understand the history of Trail of Tears and what it is. Matter of fact, it's even hard to find a good historical account of the Trail of Tears. One thing that I looked at said it went on for like 70 years, and then another thing says, no, it was only like 10, 15, 20 years. So it just depends on which historical account you look at and who counts what as what. So if we can go to the next slide. And so it was actually created by Andrew Jackson as part of the Indian Removal Act. And this goes all the way back to 1838. It actually went back a few years before that. But in 1838 is where they started rounding people up. And then they moved them to basically these imprisonment areas where they would just bring everybody in. It was a concentration camp of sorts where they just brought everybody in and they stockaded them there for a while. They rounded up, I think it was, what did I have up there? I think it's 60,000 tribal members from five major tribes and then other tribes as well. And they rounded these people up, they put them in a stockade setup, and then basically what they did was they brought in thousands of soldiers to begin moving these people across the United States. And there's multiple trails. I think the next picture has the different trails, if I'm right. Yes. So these blue lines are all the different trails that were used for the Trail of Tears. So there's actually multiple trails. The main one is the Northern Trail, and that was the one that was used to move most of the Cherokee from out east to there. And they started in Cherokee, South Carolina, and they moved from there over to Oklahoma. What ended up happening was it was the coldest winter in history when they did this to date. Of any kind of recorded history that they had at that point, that was the coldest winter. And many, many people died along the way. They estimate somewhere around 5 to 7, depending on what numbers you look at. But the consensus seems to be about 5,000 people died along the way. And Jimmy actually did this on a bicycle back in the 80s. I think it was 1986, he told me. They went out to South Carolina and they rode their bike 65 miles a day all the way back to Oklahoma. And when he did it, now this is only back in the 80s, he said he remembers passing by these mass grave sites where the bodies were just piled up into a pile and the bones were still above ground because they were never taken care of. So the bones were just sitting above ground and they were sitting there. He was able to tell me stories so far that when they got to certain rivers like the Mississippi River, mothers would have to make the decision of to leave their baby on the shoreline or try to swim across the water because they just marched the people across the river in ice cold water. And many died and froze to death. And it was just a horrible thing. Babies were let go and passed down the river. And it was just a very traumatic event. And so this continued on. What's the next one I have? So this is our upcoming route, but I'll get to that. Can we go back to the last one, and then I'll get to that. So this was a horrific, horrific thing, right? And it has had a huge holding on the Native American community. And to be honest, I understand completely. I don't sit, they should just brush this off. No, this is a major thing that took place. And it was all part of this Native American Removal Act. The funny thing to me, as you look through history and you go back through all the historical issues that went on with Native Americans and the white man and the settlers and all this stuff, the Cherokee almost never show up in the history as being a negative side to this, but yet it's almost like they were like, okay, they're the easy group. Let's just take them and really decimate them. And so they went after them, and there's not a lot of talk as to the Cherokee being a negative influence. What's interesting is their government was very impressive and was used a lot to reflect in the American government. The way they ran things was really neat, and nobody really cared about them. They became businessmen. They actually had plantations in the South. They had massive farms and things like that. They were a very well-organized tribe. And yet they were the main ones to get picked on and taken out in this first wave. And that it also came down to there's another tribe called Chickasaw, and there's just a whole series of tribes that were lumped into this thing and moved across. And so you sit there and you go, okay, I understand where this anger and this heartache would come from this thing. I mean, it goes beyond anger. It's a sorrow that your whole people, the land that you love and know, is ripped away from you, and you're moved away from it. And you go from the beautiful East Coast mountains and everything where they lived, and you take them out to Oklahoma, where you can see from one side of the state to the other. You know, and think about they lost everything, and they lost mothers, wives, children, you know, everything along this trail. And that was only going back to the 1830s, which is amazing when you think time-wise. That's not all that long ago. It's not really. You're talking maybe four generations of people going back, and you're there. And it's, you know, so think about that. My grandma, great-grandma, great-great-grandma, and then you're almost there to where this was taking place. And so Jimmy and I began talking about this. He said, Doug, I want to revisit this Trail of Tears. And I said, I would love to do it. Like, right off the bat, I'm like, Jimmy, this is something we need to do. And so we started talking. Yeah, we can do this as a Cherokee man and a white man retraveling the Trail of Tears. And we're going to do it together as brothers in Christ and as just brothers in general, as just friends rather than enemies. And I said, Jimmy, you know, it's interesting because years ago, I traveled with a group from South Africa, and this team from South Africa, there was a German guy that was on the team, and we ended up in Minnesota, and the German guy, his name was Ben. Ben was my best buddy. We'd get confused. We looked a lot alike, and we'd go places, and people say, well, I told Ben, and no, you told Doug, and like that's, you know, how things were going. We ended up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. My grandpa lived there. My grandpa was a World War II vet. He killed a lot of Germans. I asked him once, I said, Grandpa, how many people did you kill? He goes, I'm not sure, but I know I killed at least five with my bare hands. And so now we're out traveling around, and I said, man, isn't it crazy? Me and this German guy are traveling together in the name of God, and we are talking about reconciliation, and now I'm having dinner with my grandfather, whose job it was to go out and kill Germans at one point. That's what God can do. That's the restoration power of God. And I thought, man, that's so neat. And my grandpa said, well, who are you traveling with? I said, Grandpa, I'm traveling with this German guy. And I could see he was just happy about that, that the restoration was coming around. And he's like, wow. And, you know, those are the things that God can do. And so when Jimmy and I started talking about this, I said, Jimmy, we need to do this together. This is something we need to do together. And he said, yeah, we're going to do this. And he called me up the other day. He said, Doug, we are going to do something that's historically never been done before. He's like, and I said, Jimmy, I've been trying to do research on the Trail of Tears, and I can't find a whole lot of documentaries. There's not a lot out there. He says, no, Doug, there's not. There's not much that's been done on this story. So you have this horrific thing that took place, and yet nobody's going back and looking at it. It just doesn't exist for a lot of the historical context. And so we started talking. I said, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to do two things with this. We're going to travel together, but then we're going to film a documentary. This documentary is going to be two-part. One, it's going to be historical in nature. We're going to talk to museums and all the historical people we can find along the way who can give us stories. We're going to talk to them. But at the same time, we're also going to document stories of hope along the way. We're going to find the people who can say, yeah, we went through this, but we've overcome in the name of Jesus. And those are the stories we want to share. So what's neat about this is you go, okay, why the two? Because if you don't have the historical context, you can't understand the hope that people have found in Jesus Christ. You have to know that. But there's a secret side to this too, that as we create a documentary of this sort, we can put this out there. There are not really a lot of documentaries done, which means when the high school kid is sitting at school and has to do a documentary himself or a book report or something, some kind of historical, you know, paper on the Trail of Tears, this is a documentary that he could end up finding. And they are going to hear how horrible things were, but what Jesus can do. And so I'm really excited about that part of it as well, because now we're getting into, you know, that secret spy type Christianity, like when they smuggle Bibles into China and things like that. It's a neat way to get this message out there because nobody's really doing it. And so Jimmy and I talked the other day. He said, hey, guess what? I said, what's going on? He goes, I have a setting up to meet elders along the way. Now, in the Native culture, I can talk to anybody I want. It doesn't do me any good. If I can win the elders, I've done something really good. And so we are going to go in and meet with some elders along the way in different communities. I know he's saying in Cherokee, South Carolina, we're going to meet up with some. And that will help us get into even more places. And so I'm excited because God's already been doing this thing and setting things up. And we're really excited about what God's doing. If you want to go to the next slide now, and then I'll show you. This is what my trip is going to look like to some extent. So we start up there, obviously, at Beloit. We'll go all the way down here to Cherokee, South Carolina. And then that lower stretch over all the way over to Oklahoma, to Choctaw Nation. And Choctaw is another tribal group, very neat group of people. They're historically responsible for a lot of the mound buildings that we find. If you've ever heard, there's a big pyramid down in Illinois that they found on accident, and it's this big, huge pyramid that represents a city that was larger than any other city at the time. That was the Choctaw that had done that. And so they also got moved over to Oklahoma. But yeah, we'll be traveling that whole entire trail. It's through mountains and valleys and rivers and streams, and we're going to do all of it, and we're trying to do it in about 2 weeks' time. And that should give us the time to stop and document things along the way and keep going. I've been asked, are we going to walk? No, we're not going to walk because I have to take camera equipment, and it's also going into winter, and who knows what it's going to be like down there up in the mountains and things like that. So we are going to drive it, but we'll be walking parts of the trail. We'll probably get out and do walks and things like that. Right now, we are trying to figure out our sleeping arrangements. Last year, I bought a camper, an RV camper, and I was so excited. It was like a half camper, and I realized it was beyond repair, but about 2-3 weeks ago, I was like, I'm going to fix it. I'm just done. We don't have a camper. I need something. I'm going to go out and fix it. I went out, and I started gutting it. I was excited. I even bought stuff to start fixing it. I went up on the roof. I patched what I thought were the holes. And then when it rained this week, I realized there were many, many, many more holes, and they were a lot larger than I thought they were, and it's beyond repair as far as I'm concerned for the amount of money I would have to put into it. So then I called Jimmy, and Jimmy goes, well, I'm getting two tents. We'll sleep in tents along the way. I said, Jimmy, it's kind of hard to edit video stuff at night in a tent. So I'm not sure what's going to go on with that. So we are praying for a miracle in that area that we do need some kind of camper, because that one just is not going to cut it. If anybody would like an old Ford motor, I have one. It's in a camper, but you got to take all of it. It's just really neat to see what God's been doing, though. You know, you sit here and say, oh, I'm so worried about this and that. And I go, yeah, whatever. God will provide. I can sleep in the back of my car. To be honest, if we don't have the camper and I just had to record everything and then come back and dump it all at once, that's fine. We can do that. You know, we don't sit here and let these things get in the way. We just say, you know, I keep going back to this thing of Jesus looking to the disciples and telling them, when you go, don't take anything with you. You just take what you need and God will provide along the way. And, you know, that's not a very comforting conversation that Jesus had with missionaries. It's the one conversation in the Bible I wish he would not have had. Because when you do get called out into the mission field and you go, don't take anything, that's not, you know, it's hard to live by that. But I also think God can provide before. And I've seen him do that. And I don't know if I shared this with you, but my first time going to South Africa, I needed a plane ticket, $1,500. And back then, this was before the websites were very popular and everything. And we had raised about $1,000, and I was still $500 short of an airplane ticket. And the guys from South Africa called me up. They said, "Are you going to come?" I said, "If I have to get on a boat and sit in a cargo ship, I will be there. We're going to make it happen." And I got home. We actually had my farewell party on Monday. And everybody said, "Well, when are you leaving?" I said, "Well, I'm supposed to leave next Monday, but we don't know yet because I don't have plane tickets." And I said, "Oh, okay." Nobody wrote a check. Nobody was like, "Oh, we'll help." Nothing, nothing like that. On Thursday night, I came home from work, and my mom said, "Hey, somebody dropped off a $100 check for you." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, that's great." And she goes, "Oh, by the way, Grandma wants you to come over and see you. She's going to give you a check for $100." I said, "Okay, now I'm only $300." At that point, I had been fired from my previous job when they found out I was going to go into the mission field. They said they didn't need me anymore and whatever. And it's funny because it was owned by Christians, but they literally pushed me out the door once they heard I was going into the mission field. And so I said, "Okay." And we went over to this prayer meeting because I had to drop off my orders from the day. I was selling Beloit Daily News paper subscriptions. And so I had to go drop them off, the orders that I had for the day, to my boss. Well, he was having a Bible study. And I went in, and they go, "Well, we want to pray for you before you leave." And one of the ladies that was there said, "Well, how much money do you need?" I said, "$300." She got out her checkbook and wrote a check for $300. Within hours, that $500 came through. And I said, "Wow, this is crazy. I didn't even have my passport yet. My passport didn't come till like Saturday." I mean, that's how God like orchestrated this whole thing. And so we go down the next day. I said, "We got to find a plane ticket for $1,500." Well, now that we were supposed to leave on Tuesday and the tickets were $3,000. And I said, "Oh my goodness, what are we going to do?" So the lady that was at the office, I was working for Youth for Christ at the time, she jumped on the computer and she stumbled onto this thing called Hotwire, which nobody knew what Hotwire was at that time. You know, now Hotwire is kind of a household name as far as travel. But at that point, nobody knew. And you went in and you basically bid how much you were willing to pay, and then they would find a flight. And she was able to find a flight for exactly $1,500. And it was probably the best flight that I've had in all my flights. And that's what God can do. God can do that. So when we come up and we say, "Oh, we don't have a camper, we don't have a trailer," I said, "It's okay, God. God will take care of it." And then that's when you look in the Bible, and I preach on this, so I'm not going to preach a whole sermon on it, but it says that faith is the evidence of things expected. And so that is where our testimony comes in, is that when we can stand up and say, "I expect that God's going to move this way, and God will expect this way." And when He does move that way, people are going to go, "Wow, you had the faith. You knew that God would do that." And so I stand here and I go, "I don't know how it's going to work. Maybe we don't have the camper, but God will provide a way along the way." And that's what we just rely on. You know, it's like, yeah, all the bells and whistles are fun, but we don't hold back our ministry because we don't have the bells and whistles. You know, we sit here, pastor says, "Oh man, it's hot. What are we going to do? We'll throw in two air conditioners into a brick wall rather than running a whole air con system through the whole building or whatever. We'll just do that." You know, it's not the prettiest or the most spectacular way to do it, but does it get the job done? Yes. And sometimes that's what God wants from us because that's where He sees our servant heart. You know, we can sit back a lot of the times and go, "Well, I can't do that because I don't have," and we can list off whatever we don't have. You know, "Oh, we don't have worship team. We don't have a worship team at church, so we can't have service. We got records and CD." Well, records, no, we don't use records. See, I haven't even used records, so sorry. We got CDs, we got MP3s and audio files and all this kind of stuff. We can have our own worship set with that. You know, and that's the thing. We don't have to sit back and wait for God to provide all the high tech stuff. Because again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning. He is not looking for the high tech and the high all energy and all that stuff. He's looking for a heart. And that's all He's cared about. That's all He's ever cared about. Where's your heart? And, you know, if we take that, and I was just sitting there right before we came up, and this came in John chapter 5. And this is one of my favorite stories because I don't understand it. And that's why I love it. John chapter 5 says, after these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. The Jewish people love their feasts. They're good people. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool that is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five portices. That is a weird word. All right, portices. And these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel of the Lord went down at certain seasons into the pool and stirred up the water. Whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in and was made well from whatever disease which he was afflicted. Now, I've heard a lot of sermons on this section here. What is incredible to me is the way this is worded. It does not sound like a symbolic thing, and I don't know. I really don't know what the truth. So I'm not preaching a doctrine on what is happening at the Pool of Bethesda, okay? But if you look here, it says, in those days, a multitude who were sick, blind, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving waters, for an angel of the Lord went down at certain seasons. I don't know what was going on there, but it would have been really neat to see. Because apparently this guy, as we go on, a man who had been there, been ill for 38 years. This guy's been waiting there for who knows how many years. He's been ill for 38 years, and he's seen enough that he's going to sit by this pool and wait for something to happen. So obviously something must have been taking place, because I don't know, people, if you guys wait, we can't wait 5 minutes in line at Walmart. I don't understand how this guy is waiting who knows how many years to get his healing at this pool. So something had to have happened that assured him that, hey, if I can ever just get in there, I'm going to get this healing that I want. And when Jesus saw him lying there, he knew that he had already been a long time in that condition. He said to him, do you wish to get well? The sick man answered, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps in before me. Jesus said, get up, pick up your pallet, and walk. Immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet and began to walk. And then it goes on to this whole issue of he healed somebody on the Sabbath and all this stuff. The point is, this guy saw something, and he put his faith in the possibilities that the angel, and the thing here is, he's not waiting for some like spooky thing to happen. It says it's an angel of God that did this. So he's got some kind of connection that this comes from God and that he needs to get there. He has that connection. That's the understanding, that the angel of God is going to come down, stir the waters. If he can get in, he can get healed. How many times do we sit here and we want God to do something, but we don't have the patience for him to do it, so we go out and find our own way around it and we do our own thing? He could have gotten up at any time and left. Anytime he could have gotten up and said, I give up, I'm done. But for whatever reason, he waited there, and he waited there, and he waited there. And he couldn't get it, but he said, someday I will get my healing through this place. And you know what's crazy? He got his healing, but it wasn't the way he expected. Jesus shows up, and without throwing him in the water, without doing anything, without stirring the water, without anything, Jesus just comes up and says, well, get up and walk. You're done. You're fixed. You're okay, go. And I bet the guy's like, no, I didn't get in the water yet. The water didn't move. I didn't get in the water. Jesus says, you don't need the water to move. I already took care of it. Get up. And it wasn't what he expected. It was not the way he thought it had to happen. And a lot of times we put God in a box and we say, God has to move this way. I know, because I read a story in the Bible where they put the guy in the pit with the lions, and God shut their mouth. So God will do it the same way. Wait, God can actually prevent you from getting into the pit to begin with. Whoa. What? Yeah, you don't have to get into the pit. God can come before that. Now, that doesn't mean he always will. Sometimes he needs you to go through some things so that you can come out on the other side and have a testimony. It would be great, could you imagine, if we all just got everything we ever wanted from God? If we just all had it right off the bat, what testimony would we ever have? We wouldn't have a testimony. We would just have daily life. You know, if God acted like a genie, but you had unlimited wishes, oh God, I wish I had a Ferrari in my garage. There it is. There's no story to that at the end of the day. But when you go, oh God, I need... When I lived in Pennsylvania and I was pastor, I was telling Pastor Tim about this a little bit the other day. When I lived in Pennsylvania, I was moved out there. They said, you'll live in the upstairs of the church. Cool, live in the upstairs of the church. It was 2008. I had no clue what was going on with the economy because I didn't care. I got out there to Pennsylvania. All I knew was I was moving to Pennsylvania in the middle of January. I was happy. I'd always wanted to live in Pennsylvania. The whole county had 5,000 people. It was beautiful. I loved it. It was one of the most beautiful places you could go to. And then I got out there and realized there were no jobs. And if a job did open, I was the new guy in town. I was an outsider. I wasn't getting a job. And so I sat there and said, well, I don't know what to do. The pastor, I made friends with the pastor. I'd go to his services on Sunday nights. And he said, hey, Doug, do you want to go out to eat? I knew I didn't have gas to get to dinner that night. I said, no, pastor, I'm fine. I got to go home. Oh, come on, Doug. I want to go out with you and you know, we'll go get a sandwich or something. Now, you got to understand, it's a small town, so going out to get a sandwich meant we went to the gas station. They had a really cool, like, kiosk. You go in and order, and then they would just spit your food out of some kind of weird machine. I don't even know if people made your food there. I think it was all machines. But it was neat. So I said, well, I'm fine. I got to get home. He says, well, what? And he kept pushing. And you know what it's like when you don't want to tell somebody, hey, I'm going through a hardship. I don't want to tell you. And then they keep asking you and pushing you and you're going, stop it. Just stop it. I don't want to talk about this. I'm here as a minister of the gospel. I don't have problems because that's not what God wants from us. That's a lie, by the way. I'm making that up. But that's the approach that a lot of people in ministry take. I don't have problems. So this guy, he kept pushing me. Come on, Doug, come on. I said, I can't go. And he says, well, why not? I said, I don't have money for gas. He goes, you're not going out to eat with me because of gas? I said, no. He says, oh, get in the car. I'm going to go fill your tank up. I said, what? Yeah, we'll fill your tank up and then I'm going to get you some food too. I said, wow, that's crazy. And you know how many times that happened to me while I was out there? That I would get down on gas to the point where I didn't have anything, and God would show up in some way and send somebody along the way to give me some money here or do this there. And, you know, and one of the crazier times was in October. It was this time of year. And I went to service on, I think it was a Sunday night or something like that, and he goes, hey, next Sunday is... Pastor Appreciation Sunday. Now, at this time, I wasn't married. I lived in the upstairs of the church. I had my cat that I brought with me. And then I ended up with this irritating dog that somebody gave me. It was the worst dog I've ever owned in my life. I was happy to see it go when it left. And that's very strange for me. I am never happy to see an animal go. That dog, I was happy. I said, good. That dog ate loaves of bread. All right, I'm poor. I have no money. And I would go downstairs because I lived, had to park downstairs, bring the food up, set it on the cupboard, went downstairs to get more food. I came back up. The dog ate the whole loaf of bread. I said, in 5 seconds, that dog ate a whole loaf. I was so glad to see that dog go. I did not like that dog. So, and then it almost got me killed by a deer one day because it took off after a doe with her fawn. And it took off after them. And then it got the fawn must have gotten put down somewhere and buried down. And the next thing I know, the dog's running at me. And I look up, and the doe is in full gallop behind the dog coming straight at me. And I'm going, I don't know what to do in this situation. The dog is coming at me, and so is this doe. And then the dog comes and hides behind me like, hey, will you protect me, please? No. The doe could kill you for all I care. I don't like you, you know, whatever. And the doe finally stopped and took back off to go get her fawn. But that dog was just irritating. And so I had the dog, I had my cat, and I lived upstairs by myself of the church. And so on this Sunday, the pastor said, hey, You guys, we want to honor Doug next Sunday. He doesn't have a real congregation. They probably don't even know it's Pastor Appreciation Sunday. So we are going to have Doug come here and be part of our service next Sunday as a thank you dinner for the pastor. I said, oh, that's so nice. And then he goes, and many of you don't know that Doug lives in a church by himself. And I said, wait, where's this going? And he sits up there and all he has is his cat and his dog. And then we have service on Sunday and sometimes people don't show up because I was telling him some of the things that was going on. And he says, and then he just wrecked his car, so he doesn't even have a car. So, oh my goodness, I'm living a country song. And he started going down this line. I said, my life is horrible. I didn't know it. Now I do. I went to church. It really built me up. And he said, we want to honor Doug next Sunday. Because I was 26 years old when I had moved out there, and he was 26 years old when he had came to the town. And he told me over and over again, he said, Doug, the only difference between you and me was I was married when I came to this town to pastor. And he goes, I know you're not married. I know you don't have that support. You don't you don't have somebody to go up and lean on after a Sunday when nobody's there. And he said, this is your Gethsemane. You're coming here to be broken and understand things. And I got to tell you, I learned things in that year of my life that most pastors will never know. And many pastors will never, ever even hear about when they go to Bible school because nobody teaches that side of ministry. Nobody teaches that pastor is sitting here and comes to church on a Sunday and three people show up and he's prepared for all week to have a sermon and now nobody's there. And then you walk away, and even though as a pastor we're not supposed to, you walk away and go, is it something I did? Why don't the people, why aren't they coming? What am I doing wrong, God? You know, and you start going through all of that. Well, we ended up growing the church. It ended up growing a little bit, and we had at least a continuous group that were coming. But, you know, I made mistakes. I walked in, they asked me to take over this other church. Well, I was there, right? I got paid $50 a week to go take care of this other church, and that was my only income. They said, go take care of this other church. I said, okay. So I went over to that church. I cleared it out the first Sunday. I stood up in front of the church, and I said, hey, we're going to start giving testimonies. And this is weird because apparently testimonies have been part of my forte going back all these years. And they said, what? And they said, well, some of us don't like to give testimonies. I said, that's okay. We're all going to get up and give testimonies because if you can't give a testimony, and my exact terms were, you're worthless to God because how is he going to use you if you won't even testify about what he's done in your life? The next Sunday, there was five people showed up to church. I cleared it out. I learned from it, but at the same time, I think it was God was showing me something way back then. There are a lot of people sit in church and they don't know why they're there. They come because it's the right thing to do. I'm supposed to get up Sunday. I'm supposed to come to church. And wait, the pastor's going to challenge me to actually be a Christian? No, we don't do that. We come to church to... But see, then you have the people who come every Sunday, and just like this guy waiting by the pool of Bethesda, they come every Sunday and they wait. And they say, God, when are you going to show up and do this incredible thing? God, when are you going to come into the picture and do what I need you to do? And they sit there and they go, well, I don't know, whatever. I don't know when God's going to show up, but he's going to show up. And then all of a sudden, God shows up in some way that they never expected. I have a friend in South Africa. He has a church. They had a couple came to church that Sunday, and they had a need. They had a certain need, and as they were sitting there, they got up, and God said, go put money in the bin. So they got up, and they came up at that church. They put the money down on the platform, and they just lay it down on the platform. And they got up to do that. They came back. There's money sitting under their seat. They don't know where the money came from. The money manifested there while they were up doing that. And the pastor watched it. He looked down, and all of a sudden there was money there. And he said, hey, guys, is that your money? And they said, no, that's not our money. It was exactly the amount they needed. He had somebody else came to church, and they said, we have a need. Can we pray for it? They said, yeah, sure. So they prayed for it. And that night, now, in South African money, they talk about millions. It'd be thousands of dollars came into their bank account, and they were able to save their house. We sat at another meeting. The lady came in and she said, hey, they're going to take my business. Now, South Africa runs like a communist nation. They are actually communist, but they look like a democracy the way they operate. And so they come in and they said, they are going to take my business. She was a white lady who owned a business, and race is not typically important, but in this story it is. She was a white lady who had a business, and they wanted the black Muslim people to be able to take their business and grow. And her business was thriving, so they were going to kick her out so that the Muslim business could do stronger. And it sounds crazy, but that's what they do. They do these kinds of things all the time there. And so they came in, and she came to the prayer meeting. She said, we need to pray. Here's the note. I have 30 days to vacate my building. They're going to take it. It was like a generational business. They had a tire business and all this stuff. We prayed about it. And I'm sitting there going, this is crazy. I don't know how this is going to work out. All of a sudden, she gets a letter or goes to her court hearing or whatever, however it worked out. And they said, no, we are going to pay you to move your building. You're going to get a bigger building, a better building, and you're going to get more inventory than you ever had. And she ended up getting a blessing out of this situation. She did not know that could happen. She came just asking God, can I survive in the place where I am? And God said, no, not only am I going to let you survive, I'm going to promote you and give you even more than you ever thought. It does not always have to be the way we think it's going to work out. God can do things in crazy ways, and we sit there going, whoa, what just happened? And, you know, we sit here at church, and we come in every Sunday. And it's the same in churches all around the country where people come to church, and they go, God, this thing is going on in my marriage. This thing's going on with my kids. This thing's going on in my job. This thing is going, and they keep coming up with these situations. Now, some of it is we need to step out and do things on our own. You know, God does give us the ability to fix things based on biblical principle. This week I was asking God, I said, God, what's the difference between a reason and excuse? Right? Because we all can come up with really good excuses. Why didn't you do the dishes? Well, my favorite TV show came on, and, you know, the commercials were actually really good, and I just couldn't step away from it, and now the dishes aren't done. That's an excuse, right? Why didn't you get the dishes done? Well, the house caught on fire and I had to get out. That's a reason. Difference. So I said, God, what's the difference between an excuse and a reason? And this is what was really neat. And this is what he gave me. And it's just kind of crazy. A reason will line up with Scripture. An excuse won't. Wow. That's heavy, right? So we come to this church and we say, God, why aren't you doing this thing in my life? This thing needs to get done, da 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 da. And God's going, I already gave you all the tools. Stop making excuses and get to the reason. The reason is I'm not honoring the information God has given. You know, the book of James goes, hey, if any of you lack wisdom, ask your father for wisdom. God, I don't know how to film. I don't know anything about video. I don't know about the rule of thirds, that you're supposed to keep the subject on the third of the frame, not in the center. You're not supposed to shoot from the bright side. You're supposed to shoot from the dark side. These are things I know nothing about. And I started saying, okay, God, if I'm going to do this, you have to teach me. You have to give me an understanding. And the next thing I know, I get involved with this program that starts to teach me how to do film. And I start to learn these simple little tricks that just make it, it doesn't cost any money to shoot from the dark side versus the light side, right? You just set the camera up differently. But it makes a huge difference on the way that the shot looks. It's crazy. I didn't know these things. I said, I'll give you the wisdom and the knowledge on how to do it. You know, and that's the way God can operate, is that if we go after him and we say, God, I need this thing in my life, and then first we have to do what we can do to fix it, right? If we're around toxic people, we may need to get rid of the toxic people. If there's horrible, toxic people in your life and you're going, God, every time I hang out with these people, I feel horrible. Stop hanging out with them. Right? I mean, it's that simple. I had this girl. I don't know if I shared this. At one point, I knew this girl. She was dating a guy. He was abusive. And he'd keep abusing her. They break up. They get back together. He'd abuse her. They break up. They get back together. And he wasn't necessarily physically abusive, but he was just very assertive in the way he would treat her, and he would, you know, take her down. And she came to me, and she every time she would call me, Doug, why do I keep going back to him? Finally, one night, I remember I was sitting out in New York on a ministry trip, and she called me, I said, Doug, I did it again. Why do I keep doing it? And I said, can I ask you something? She said, what? I said, if you go up and touch the stove and it's hot, You go, ouch, right? Yeah. What happens if you touch the stove again? She goes, well, then you're stupid. I said, yeah, you're touching the stove. You're being stupid. I never talk that way to people. I don't. And she goes, you're right. She broke up with that guy and never got back with him. She had the tools. She knew what she needed to do. But she kept putting herself back in that situation. And you know, at the same time, she's probably sitting there asking, God, why do you keep me with this guy? And God's like, huh? I didn't put you with this guy. You put yourself with the guy. Step away. Stop touching the stove. We've got to stop touching stoves. And it's not even in relationships. We do it in all sorts of places. God, why do I keep entertaining myself with things that aren't of God? Because you don't turn the power off on the TV, on the computer, on the phone, whatever. God, why am I so lippy with my parents? There's no kids in here. Well, there's one, but now I just turned on to you, all right? The whole sermon's about you right now. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Why am I so lippy with my parents? Well, do you ever stop after you're lippy with your parents and think about what happened? Parents, do you ever think about how we talk to our kids? And maybe that's what's causing them to respond that way? The reality of things. Why is my kid so lippy with me? Well, what are we doing back? What do they see as a reflection? So coming back to this, if this thing is happening, right? God is sending an angel to stir the waters. It's evident that something is going to happen. You're a Christian. That's all the evidence you need that something is going to happen. You believe in God. You put your faith in God. You honor Him. You do what you can to be the best Christian you can possibly be. You seek to be sanctified in some way, shape, or form. You do everything you can. At some point, He's going to show up. It may not look the way you thought it would. For all I know, God could pull up with a 50-foot RV bus and say, hey, this is for you. And I'm terrified to drive it. That's why I know He won't. Because I'm too terrified to drive something that big. But it's a reality. We don't know how God is going to honor these things. There's a story I read once in a book about a guy. He was on his way home for his anniversary. He's a mechanic. On his way home from work, and he stops by, and he sees this car on the side of the road. It was a limo of some sorts, or like one of those town car more things. And so he jumps out, and he goes and says, what's wrong? And he says, oh, my tire's flat. He says, man, I'm in a hurry. I got to get home, whatever. My wife's going to kill me, but for whatever reason, I need to stop and help this guy. So he stops, and he helps the guy. He says, all right, thank you, sir. What's your name? He hands him a card. He says, you ever need anything else, just come find me at my shop. The guy says, okay. So about a week later or something like that, the wife is at home and there's a knock on her door. She says, yeah, hello? And the guy goes, you don't know me, but I met your husband a week ago. You probably wanted to kill him because he was late getting home for your anniversary. But he stopped and helped me on the side of the road. How much do you owe on your house? And the lady says, however much it was tens of thousands. The guy gets out his checkbook and writes the check, says, thank you. True story. We don't know what God is going to call of us to do. You know, there's that idea that we entertain angels unaware. We don't know who we bump into that God said, I'm setting the situation up because I want to see how you'll respond. You say, wow. And then God says, you responded correctly. Let me take care of that. I was telling Pastor Tim, I have this pastor friend again over in South Africa. Anytime he comes up to a financial dilemma in his ministry, he will call his daughters help run the church, and he will call them up and say, who needs money? Who can we give seed to? Because then he'll sow into it, and God has always provided for whatever he needs once he gets out of his own way. By understanding that money is just a tool, it is nothing more than a tool. I like watching Shark Tank, and Mr. Wonderful, he said something in one episode, and I've clung to it ever since then. He says, never weep for money because money will not weep for you. Whoa, that's crazy. And he said, he's not a Christian guy, whatever. But that's a philosophy that's so true. Money is a tool. You can cry for it all you want, but it's never going to cry back for you. And so, you know, we sit there, and that's what this pastor over in South Africa says. Hey, if I have a need, let me give my money away so that God can bless me, but I will bless whoever. This guy has given away so many cars that the church went out and bought him a car. It's a Mercedes. Now, in South Africa, Mercedes isn't as cool as it is here. Like here, if you got a Mercedes, you're on top of the world. There, it's more of like, eh, a nice Ford type thing because everybody drives Mercedes and BMW and whatever. But they gave him this Mercedes and they made him sign a contract saying he would not give the car away because he gives away so many cars. And so they were like, no, you can't give away any more cars. You're done for a while. So as far as I know, he still has that car and he keeps trying to get rid of it. And then they remind him, no, you signed a contract. You can't get rid of this one. He left the service one day in his underwear. Because God talked to him while he was preaching. True story. He left the service in his underwear because while he was preaching, they had bought him this ugly yellow suit that he didn't like. And while he was preaching, God said, there's a young man up there who needs your suit. And he says, oh God, that suit won't fit him. And he keeps going back and forth and giving the guy the jacket. Then he goes, God says, no, give him your shirt. He says, God, I can't give him my shirt. And then he says, no, go. He says, give him your shoes. No, my shoes won't fit that kid. He's too tall. The kid says, oh no, that's exactly the size shoe I wear. And then God says, give him your pants. He says, God, can I wait till the end of the service to give him my pants? So he said, boy, meet me in the back. And then they met in the back of the sanctuary. He gave him his pants and he rode home in his underwear, hoping that he wouldn't get pulled over by the police for any reason. But that's the way, if we live that way, it's amazing what God can do. If we put our faith in God and say, you know what, none of this stuff has anything to do with it. You know, when I first got into video and all this stuff, I said, God, I don't have the big video cameras. He goes, you got a photography camera that can do pictures, right? No, I'm going to say no because I'm trying to find an excuse out of this thing. Oh, you got it. But God, everybody else is shooting with these huge video cameras that are thousands. I mean, I'm looking at one that I would love to get. It's $10,000. I'm not going to get it, not on my own. God can provide it somehow. But I'm sitting there going, it would be nice. It would be so nice. God goes, why do you need that? You got what you need right now. Okay. We'll do what we got to do now. See, if we stop making the excuses, and that's one of those excuses. Oh, God, if only I had the thing that I need. And God says, you already do. Stop whining. Okay. God, I want a brand new car. I want a beautiful car. I want it to be shiny and it's, you know, heads up display and it'll talk to me when I drive and it'll even park itself because I don't like to parallel park. I said, you don't need that. You have a car that gets you by. You know, talking to somebody who's about to go on to a fixed income. They say, oh, I want to get a car. I said, okay, you want to get a car that you know is going to last because you're going into a fixed income situation. You don't want to be getting a car that's going to cost you, you know, lots of repairs down the road. So, you know, you go out and you say, oh, God, I want this car. God says, no, 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 no. You don't want that car. You want this one over here. But, God, I really want that car. God says, nah, that one's going to need a lot of repairs down the road. This car over here is a solid car. You should go with it. You know, and that's the thing is if we rely on God, he can do these things. He can step in. We just have to be able to listen. You know, and that's kind of this whole story of dealing with this trip out to South Africa this year. God really was talking a lot, and I wasn't listening. I mean, he talked very clearly, and I didn't listen. You know, and it came down to the last minute and not even having the confirmation that it was him speaking until we canceled. But, you know, we've got to learn to listen. We just got to learn to do that and stay focused. What's the last slide I have up here? I think there is one more. It's time to reverse the curse. We can all live under some kind of curse. We really can. We put ourselves in curses all the time. God, I'm to this, I'm to that. I can't do these things you've called me to do. Those are curses. We speak those curses over our lives on a fairly regular basis. Oh, I'd like to spend time with so-and-so, but my knees hurt too bad. I got up this morning, I got this dumb thing with my foot. I got it on a road trip, actually, going a few years ago, and now my foot's never felt right since then. I don't know, going out to see Jimmy in Oklahoma and then driving. And then I, by the time I got back, my foot was bothering me, and it's never been right since then. For the most part, it doesn't hurt that bad. This morning I got up, I could barely walk. And I said, oh, I'm going to call Pastor Tim. I mean, I could have easily gotten on the phone at that point and said, hey, Pastor Tim, I'm not coming today. My foot hurts. I can't hardly stand. What would that do? My foot's still going to hurt. I'll be at home and it'll hurt, right? I got here. It's finally gone away. Yay. But we can't let these things take over our lives. If you know, we've got to go, okay, that's a curse. I could easily let that be. Pastor Tim, I'm going to put the curse on you now. You got to figure out a sermon in the next 20 minutes. For what? My foot hurt? I know he lets Pastor John sit on the chair. I could have come in here and said, hey, can I sit on a stool today? Right? There's no excuse. But we can make them. We're really good at it. And every one of those things is a curse that we put on our lives. And we've got to stop doing it. God, I'm not pretty enough. I'm not handsome enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not short enough. You know, all these things, we can come up with all these reasons for why we can't do things. God, I don't have money. Did you ask God for the money? One of the hardest things in the church, and I'm going to start closing, but one of the things in the church that's the hardest is to ask for finances. It really is. When people are in a financial need, it's very difficult. We were on the road at one point, and I learned a lesson because when I was traveling with a group from South Africa, we stayed at this house. And the lady had all these brand new clothes sitting in the basement. She had a missionary home from her church that we stayed in, and the basement was just filled with brand new clothes. And one of the guys had a luggage bag, and the luggage bag was falling apart, and she had some brand new luggage bags sitting down there. She had this ministry through her church where they would go out and go to these companies, kind of like TJ Maxx or something like that. I don't know what companies it was exactly. But they would get all the end of the season stuff, and then they would give it out to people in the community. They had some kind of, you know, agreement that they would do this. And so one of the guys, the African guys from my team, went to her and he says, "Hey, I really need a bag. You have some downstairs. What can I offer you some money or something? Because I really need a bag." And she was a sweet lady. She said, "Honey, are you trying to ask me for that bag?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm trying to ask you for the bag because I really don't have any money, but I'm trying to be polite about it." She goes, "The Bible says you have not because you ask not. Are you asking me for the bag?" He said, "Yeah, I'm asking you for the bag." She goes, "You go down there, you get that bag, you fill that bag up with any clothes you want, and you are blessed. We have not because we ask not." That ask doesn't always come with an immediate answer either. I mean, look at the church. We're asking God to fill the church, right? That's the ask. And we go like this. You know, you bring in 20, you lose 18. And it just keeps going like that. Other times, it's coming. Someday you walk in here and you're going to be mad. There's no place to sit. Some of you were mad because you walked in and the seats were arranged differently. I walked into church one time. I had a lady mad at me because I sat in her spot. She said, "That's my spot." I said, "That's okay. You can sit next to me." She wasn't happy about it, but she did. I said, "Ma'am, at that point I was teaching on comfort zones. I said, I teach on comfort zones, so I'm going to put you out of your comfort zone today. You can sit next to me." But hey, you guys, we might have to learn how to get used to somebody sitting in our seat. You might come in next Sunday and all of a sudden somebody's sitting there and you're going to have to go, "Okay, now that devil is manifesting on my shoulder and telling me to go yell at him, tell him to get out of my seat." Or do you go, "Thank God he finally answered our prayers and somebody new is here. I think I can move to a different seat for the day." These are all those things where we're looking for that angel to stir the water. We're just looking. We're looking for it. Where's the angel going to stir the water? And sometimes that answer is just going to come in a way that we had no clue it could possibly come. And some of you are sitting here today and you have expectations. You are waiting for God to do something and you have been asking for a long time, "God, can you do this thing? God, will you do this thing? I've been crying out. I've been praying. I've been asking for you to do this thing, but I'm not seeing it happen." God says, I'll take care of it. He can do it. God says, "I'll take care of it." I preached a whole sermon on that one Sunday and a young lady was listening into the sermon. She contacted me and my wife and said, "That sermon yesterday was for me." She got married yesterday to her husband that had been together for 27 years. She finally understood that she was looking at God the Father the way she had looked at her earthly father. And some things changed in her life along the way. She made a dramatic change in her life. Her husband, who's been the prodigal son, he's my father-in-law's son. So he's actually my son-in-law. He'd been running from God for many years. And through this whole experience, he got saved, started coming back to church, has been faithful to coming back to church. His wife has been growing in faith, and they're both growing together in faith. And they said, you know what? We've been together 27 years unmarried. We need to fix this. And they fixed it. Not 27, 16, 16 years. 16 years they've been together. We got to fix this. And they did yesterday. That's why we were sitting there yesterday at their wedding all day long celebrating this thing that happened that God can do, that only God can do, the restoration that only God can do. And you know, here's pastor who's not a very tearful person standing on the stage going, this is my prodigal son. He has come back home. And today he is joining in marriage to his wife because he has an understanding of who God is and what God can do. And God can do all those things for you. We are going forward to reverse this curse. And a lot of us, like I said, we have curses in our own lives, things that we put in. Please pray for us. Going out on these kinds of trips, you get into spiritual warfare that's different than anything. See, the problem is in America, we don't see spiritual warfare the way that most of the world sees it. We don't even see the spiritual world for most of our lives. And when you get into anything tribal or going into other countries, spiritual warfare is very real. I was telling Pastor, I've seen the Sangomas, the witch doctors, in fields having services. I have seen babies that were being thrown into the water as a sacrifice to this god or that god. I've held them in my arms. There's a little baby that I got to hold over in South Africa. His mom had threw him in the water to the water gods. She was going to kill him. And they intercepted her right as she was at the bridge about to throw him. And what's neat is the community there will call the church and say, hey, can you help us? The government calls the church for help. You know, so we are going into this, into a territory that is just beyond anything that, it's still real. The witch doctors and the medicine men, they're still active. Jimmy can tell you all sorts of stories of how they came in to kill him. They came in to put hexes on him in the middle of a service, and they ended up leaving because they got conviction. You know, all these things are so real. And so we need that prayerful covering as we go out. I'm hoping I'll be here at least one more Sunday before we leave, but I may not be because of things that are going on. Might be speaking at another church and things like that. So I'm not sure if I'll be here again. So please, just keep us in prayer in that area. Pray for our finances. Pray for the people we meet. That's probably more important than finances or anything else. I can walk if I have to. But, you know, that we meet the right people along the way and that we're able to get the stories that we need to get and document the things that we need to document and just be able to do things the right, give for wisdom because we are going into areas that I don't know. I'm happy to travel with Jimmy, who, and that's one of the things I learned a long time ago. I don't like to go into territories that I'm foreign to without somebody who understands the culture. And so I'm glad to travel with Jimmy, who can kind of help us out with those things, even though he's still talking about going to Alaska on an airplane that's never been flown. I want to know who's going to be our guide there. But, you know, we're doing these things, and I just keep those things in prayer. And, you know, we do have this kind of, I would love to see this trailer come through before we leave, just because then I can do editing along the way, and we can do updates and things like that I won't be able to do from a tent. So there is that kind of need. But, again, if it doesn't happen, we'll work around it. I'm not that caught up on it, you know. I'm not going to cancel the whole trip. So just please keep that in prayer. Keep Pastor Tim in prayer. This has kind of become my second house of worship. You know, technically I'm still tied to Beloit, but just because of the COVID thing and everything, this has become a home away from home. And as a spiritual leader, he can even come under attack for the things that I'm going through. And that's a reality, is that when we go out into the ministry field, our elders and our seniors, and I'm not saying elder and senior in a negative way, they can also come under spiritual attack. I've seen that, where the people that are responsible for you can come under a spiritual attack as well. And, you know, so we just pray for that. And it is Pastor Appreciation Month. So we pray for that, that he feels appreciated. And I think he does. You do, right? Okay, just making sure. We just want to make sure he feels appreciated, and that he understands that he's loved and cherished. So thank you again. And God, I just thank you for today. This word was so interesting because I really didn't come in with anything. And God, I hope it ministered to people. And I just pray that you will speak to each of our hearts and help us to not make excuses when there's no reason for it, that we will see the curses that we speak over our lives. God, that we can reject those things and make them right. And God, I just thank you again for this church and this ministry and for their fellowship and their being alongside this ministry since our beginning, really. And I just thank you for Pastor Tim and his heart and what he's teaching people. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.